It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
The West Africa Ebola outbreak's death toll approaches 900. Amnesty International goes after the Nigerian military. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The World Health Organization says the Ebola virus outbreak in West Africa has taken nearly 900 lives since being first detected in Guinea in March. The total number of cases reported so far, just over 1,600. In Sierra Leone, President Ernest Bai Koroma appealed to his country's people to work together to fight the deadly disease, warning the very essence of the nation is at stake. In Liberia, many healthcare workers are too frightened to show up for work. Amos Richards is a physician's assistant.
The health workers think that they are not protected. They don't have the requisite materials to use as to protect themselves against the Ebola diseases. So many of the health workers, including physician assistants, nurses, and so forth, are staying home.
Meanwhile, troops in both Liberia and Sierra Leone have been deployed to quarantine some communities hit by the Ebola disease. Authorities in Nigeria Monday reported the country's second confirmed case of Ebola, a doctor who treated the first patient who died last month in Lagos. Onyebuchi Chukwu is the country's health minister.
We have the first of those health personnel who has now become Ebola positive and is being treated as such. So if we are keeping records, this is now the second case of Ebola virus disease in Nigeria.
Also Monday, the World Bank said it will provide up to $200 million to Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone to help those countries contain the outbreak. A New York City hospital is testing a man with possible symptoms of Ebola. Officials at Mount Sinai Medical Center say a man suffering from a high fever and gastrointestinal problems arrived at the emergency room early Monday and has been isolated. An American doctor who contracted the disease while treating patients in Liberia is reported to be improving at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. Another U.S. missionary who contracted the disease in Liberia, Nancy Reitbold, is expected to arrive within hours in serious condition at the same hospital. President Obama addresses the second day of a three-day summit of African heads of state here in Washington. Monday, his Vice President Joe Biden spoke of the need for a strong civil society in Africa that encourages democracy and individual rights.
No democracy can survive without the active and intense participation of its people. You, the leaders of civil society, you empower your societies to succeed. You are the lifeblood, the lifeblood. No man can survive without the blood coursing through his veins, and no democracy can survive and thrive without the active participation of its citizens.
Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed focused on security matters, saying extremists threaten to hamper progress in East Africa, while the Ethiopia's prime minister touched on climate change. The United States is set to unveil nearly $1 billion in business deals, with more funding for peacekeeping and billions more for food and power programs. The rights group Amnesty International has accused Nigeria's military and its supporting civilian militia of extensive human rights violations in the fight against the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Mohamed Kamara, Amnesty's Nigeria researcher, insists the video showing suspects having their throats cut has not been altered.
We have spoken to people who have categorically made it clear, professionals, that this is not a doctored material. The videos are not doctored. These are actually authentic videos. And the incident actually took place in Nigeria. And the people in the video are people who are believed to be Nigerian military officers as well as members of the civilian JTF. And we are calling on the Nigerian authorities to investigate this immediately and independently and to ensure that those who are responsible are brought to justice in the fair trial.
The Nigerian Defense Ministry said it's investigating and taking the matter very seriously. Peace talks to end South Sudan's 8-month conflict resumed in Ethiopia Monday. Fighting does continue. The key agenda item is signing a previously agreed to ceasefire. There is a sense of urgency. Aid workers warn hundreds of thousands face severe hunger as farmers are unable to plant crops. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S.-Africa Summit enters its second day today, Tuesday.
So I say unabashedly, we want and we will work hard to get more American companies to invest in Africa. We also want more African companies to invest here in the United States.
As U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, a U.S. Congresswoman will host African leaders and U.S. business officials today, Tuesday. We'll examine why Zimbabwe is one of the countries not invited to this week's U.S.-Africa Summit. South Sudan government and rebel leaders resume yet another round of peace talks amid renewed fighting. And Liberia experiences a logjam of Ebola-related dead bodies.
What we are getting is resistance even from the community that these individuals should not be buried in the communities in which they reside.
Louis Brown is Liberia's information minister, and could a vaccine to cure Ebola be in the making? Those stories plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The three-day U.S.-Africa Summit enters its second day today, Tuesday, as the Obama administration works to strengthen ties with Africa. At one of the forums yesterday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry told about 50 African leaders that the United States is ready to strengthen its business ties with Africa. As Pam Dawkins reports, Kerry said Africa's economic growth benefits both Africa and the United States.
About 50 presidents and other top officials from across Africa are in Washington for the Africa Leaders Summit. Kicking off the series of events, Secretary of State John Kerry says a dramatic transformation is possible in Africa, and it's possible within the next few years.
Prosperity can actually replace poverty, and cooperation can actually triumph over conflict.
A number of the world's fastest-growing economies are in Africa, yet U.S. businesses have generally been hesitant to invest. He urged African ministers to embrace free market ideals and U.S.-Africa cooperation.
So I say unabashedly, we want and we will work hard to get more American companies to invest in Africa. We also want more African companies to invest here in the United States, and there's no reason that they shouldn't.
But he also called for greater transparency and a commitment to fight corruption.
To do so will take courage. And yes, it sometimes means assuming risks. But fighting corruption lifts more than a country's balance sheet. Transparency and accountability attract greater investment. Transparency and accountability create a more competitive marketplace.
Kerry is holding individual meetings with at least 8 African leaders on Monday. President Obama is due to address a U.S.-Africa Business Forum on Tuesday. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
An advisor to U.S. House of Representatives member Karen Bass says the Congresswoman will today, Tuesday, host African leaders and American business officials at a forum of growth and opportunity in Africa as part of the ongoing U.S.-Africa Summit. Dan Roth tells reporter Peter Clotty that the meeting will discuss the future of U.S.-Africa economic relations and the upcoming discussion in Congress to renew the Africa Growth and Opportunity Agreement, known as AGOA.
She is hosting 3 panels with leaders from some of Africa's highest economic leaders to talk with Americans about how we forge and strengthen that bond between the United States and Africa. We have increased trade between the United States and Africa, and it's benefited both the United States and Africa with increased jobs and increased prosperity. And we really want to grow on that and have an open and honest discussion about how we can do that and really levy up the importance of the countries of the African continent for the United States.
How will they explore possibilities of strengthening bilateral, deepening bilateral and multilateral relations between Washington and the continent?
Absolutely. So one of the greatest tools that we have is the Africa Growth and Opportunity Agreement, or AGOA. And it was forged when President Clinton was president, and it really has helped to increase trade between the United States and Africa. And AGOA is set to expire in 2015, and that's AGOA as we know it. And so really this is a wonderful opportunity for us to really have a great dialogue of what is working under the agreement and, frankly, how the agreement can be better. Congress will very soon begin the part of discussing the reauthorization of the trade agreement. And so we want to get from people from Africa really what they've learned on the ground so we can build on that so when we go to reauthorize AGOA that it's stronger and is actually working better for the continent of Africa and for the United States.
What should be the takeaway of this meeting, this Tuesday's meeting?
Well, really this meeting, it's of 15 people, both from the United States and Africa, and it includes economic officers from the African Union. It includes former heads of state from Africa. It also includes business administrators from the United States. And so really the discussion is, what are some tangible ways as we move into the discussion of AGOA that it will be better? So really it is and I think what is one of the wonderful things about AGOA, it is one of the few both bipartisan and also where the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate are in agreement that it is successful. And so we know that we want to renew it, but the real question is, how do we improve upon it? And also that we don't wait until the last minute, but also we don't see the September 2015 as when we start the discussion, but how do we make sure that we renew it well ahead of time so that it doesn't run out and that businesses don't have the uncertainty that they might have if we wait until the last minute.
So how will this discussion help in the possible approval or extension of AGOA? Because a lot of African countries have been calling for its extension. It appears the process is a bit slow for them, and these are concerns they've expressed. So how will this help in that directive?
And so it's really to change the mindset, and that's where the summit meets policy and is really bringing together, is that we are seeing and talking and really thinking about Africa.
Dan Rolfe is Communications Director and Policy Advisor to U.S. House of Representatives member Karen Bass. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Washington, D.C. This week's U.S.-Africa Summit is an effort by the Obama administration to strengthen American ties with the continent of Africa. But Zimbabwe, which desperately needs investment from abroad, is not represented because of President Robert Mugabe's human rights record. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare on what that means for Zimbabwe.
Talking to African journalists by telephone ahead of the meeting, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield said the summit was a historic event.
The theme of the summit is investing in the next generation. We think this reflects the common ambitions that we share with the people and governments of Africa to leave our nations better for future generations by making gains in peace and security and good governance and economic development.
But one of those missing that fruitful discussion is Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe. The 90-year-old Zimbabwean leader is subject to U.S. travel and financial sanctions because of his poor human rights record and history of alleged election rigging. Pedzisai Ruhanya, who heads the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, says Zimbabwe stands to lose a lot by not being represented at this summit.
So the meeting in Washington is important for international trade among those countries that are meeting Obama, and also countries that are looking for foreign direct investment. They will be interacting with American conglomerates and international business institutions that want to invest in developing economies such as Nigeria is now the leading economy in Africa, followed by South Africa. So it's important that those countries meet, particularly in America, where the heartbeat of international business is.
Zimbabwe's economy has alternated between depression and weak growth for nearly 15 years, ever since Mr. Mugabe's government began to forcibly drive white commercial farmers off their land. Foreign companies are generally reluctant to invest in the country because of political turmoil and Mr. Mugabe's nationalistic economic policies. Zimbabwe's Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Christopher Mutswangwa agrees with Ruhanya that the summit is crucial for Africa. But when it comes to Zimbabwe, he says the government is at peace not being present for the discussions.
Of course, we as Zimbabwe, we are not invited. You know, we have no misgivings whether we are, when America decides to exclude us. It's a country which has never been comfortable with an assertive African nationalist. We brook no strictures from anybody, including America.
The Obama administration was one of the Western governments that refused to recognize Mr. Mugabe's re-election in July 2013, which the opposition MDC party says was rigged. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Tuesday, August 5th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Liberian officials say they are working hard to correct the problems that have led to the backlog of the collection and burial of Ebola-related dead bodies. Some local media reports say an overwhelmed healthcare system has led to dead bodies being dumped in some communities and left unburied for as many as 5 days. One report said as many as 37 dead bodies were found Sunday in one of the boroughs of the capital, Monrovia. The pileup of uncollected and unburied dead bodies has led to protests in some communities. This comes as the World Health Organization said Monday that the death toll from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa has reached 900, with 255 deaths in Liberia. Liberia's Information Minister Louis Brown tells me President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has ordered the cremation of Ebola-related dead bodies to relieve the logjam.
We're pleased that people are beginning to follow the directive of the government not to bury their own. The point we're making is when the retriever teams go into this community to retrieve bodies, usually they follow the safety protocols and they attempt to bury these bodies after the protocols are exhausted in the communities so family members can have knowledge of where their loved ones were buried. What we're getting is resistance even from the community that these individuals should not be buried in the communities in which they reside. And therefore, it has caused a backlog and a slow pace at which retriever teams have been in action. And so on Sunday, the president confirmed a decision for cremation of the bodies.
So you are saying that the government has been a little bit slow, or the medical people have been a little bit slow in picking up the bodies?
Well, yes, there has been a slower pace because there was a backlog being developed, because as people were picking up bodies, communities were not permitting them to be buried in their communities. And so it had a backlog of bodies with no place to be buried, and therefore resulted to cremation, which, you know, is not a part of our culture, but we have had to do to adjust to these concerns, to lower the resistance, and to find a way to accelerate the access of retriever teams and the rate at which they are able to respond to the population.
According to one account I read, there's a hotline that people are supposed to call. And whenever that hotline is called, some people have complained that they are not getting through.
That is a possibility, but we've begun to address that. We had hotlines from at least two of the major GSM service providers. On Sunday, we enter into an additional arrangement to increase each line to each number to be able to accommodate an additional 30 lines. The situation is of such that more and more people are making calls, more and more responses are needed. In fact, we made an appeal for volunteers to come out today. That calling system, it was directly up until yesterday under the Ministry of Health. We've removed that into another facility to accommodate volunteers. People are volunteering to answer and to get the message out to retrieval centers.
Liberia's Information Minister Louis Brown was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. While there is currently no cure or vaccine for Ebola, Dr. Anthony Fauci of the U.S. National Institutes of Health said Monday that a vaccine is being developed and could soon go to trial. Dr. Thomas Geisberg researched the deadly virus for more than two decades as a professor at the Department of Microbiology and Immunology at the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. Geisberg talks to Ricky Stryak about the possibilities for a future vaccine and treatment for Ebola.
There are four or five different vaccines now that can completely protect lab animals against Ebola. And my guess is it's one of the vaccines that NIH has been working on.
What has been stopping us from having a vaccine all this time? And why is it different now?
The problem and the challenges in the past has been there's a very small global market for an Ebola vaccine. So, you know, there really hasn't been a financial incentive for a large pharmaceutical company to make an Ebola vaccine.
It seems quite fast. It only took a few months to say, okay, we can have a vaccine in September that we'll be able to test.
I do think that certainly this outbreak being the largest Ebola outbreak on record has raised awareness. And I think certainly there's been an increased concern, and particularly in the United States. So I think that that has facilitated or enhanced the possibilities of developing a vaccine or basically fast-tracking the process a little bit. I still think it's probably very optimistic to think that a licensed vaccine would be available that quickly. I think more likely perhaps a vaccine that could be used for compassionate use or, you know, in an emergency situation is perhaps more of what is being discussed.
When you say emergency in situation, do you mean right now people in Freetown and Monrovia and Conakry would be getting this vaccine?
I'm not necessarily saying or suggesting that. I think the idea of vaccinating different populations is controversial. I think a well-characterized vaccine that perhaps could be used for, you know, first responders or medical staff is maybe a place to start. But, I mean, this is all speculation.
And how is your research going? Was it in March that you guys received new funding?
So on the 1st of March, we received a grant from the National Institutes of Health here in the United States to develop what we think are three of the most promising post-exposure treatments against Ebola. And we picked these three because they're the three that have shown the most success in protecting non-human primates against Ebola.
Is there any talk of using your treatments yet on any of the people who have come down with Ebola?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it had some increased awareness. There's been a lot of interest. And the whole issue of treating the cases is pretty complex. And we have corporate partners, and I really don't want to go into any discussion on that. One of the vaccines that we developed, that it can either be used as a preventive vaccine or it can be used as a post-exposure treatment. So this vaccine actually was used in a compassionate use situation back, I think, around 2010, where a worker in a laboratory in Germany had an accident with Ebola, and the vaccine was used as a post-exposure treatment.
That was Dr. Thomas Geisberg, a professor at the Department of Microbiology and Immunology at the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Galveston, Texas. Warring factions in South Sudan say they are committed to forging a peace deal to end more than 7 months of fighting as government and rebel delegates began another round of talks on Monday in Addis Ababa. As viewers Gabe Jaslow reports, an early sign of tension emerged on Monday as the government criticized mediators for not enforcing past agreements.
Representatives from South Sudan's government and the rebel opposition are meeting to make another push for a peace deal in their country. At least 10,000 people have been killed and more than 1 million displaced in South Sudan since the conflict between supporters of President Salva Kiir and his political rival Riek Machar descended into fighting and inter-ethnic violence in December. Past ceasefire agreements between the two sides, mediated by the East African group IGAD, have been violated soon after being signed. Speaking at the opening of the talks, a representative of South Sudan's government, Niall Dang Niall, blamed IGAD mediators for failing to hold the opposition, known as the SPLMA in opposition, accountable for past violations.
Unfortunately, we are yet to see any of those consequences materialize. If anything, the lack of consequences has only emboldened the SPLMA in opposition to step up its armed campaign against government forces.
The two sides have blamed each other for the collapse of previous ceasefire deals and the continuation of fighting that has centered around South Sudan's Jonglei, Unity, and Upper Nile states. Opposition Representative Diu Mathok defended the role of IGAD, which has sent teams to South Sudan to monitor the conflict.
The SNM is committed to peaceful resolution of the conflict in South Sudan. I want to reiterate our confidence in the mediators.
Another key item on the agenda is the formation of a transitional government of national unity. A previous agreement called for the new government to be established by August 10th. That deadline is looking increasingly unlikely to be met. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. All football matches are suspended in Sierra Leone as a precaution against the spread of the deadly Ebola virus that is currently ravaging parts of the country. The Sierra Leone Football Association announced the suspension in Freetown on Monday following the declaration of a public health emergency by the country's head of state, Ernest Bai Koroma. This puts Sierra Leone's 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifying campaign in jeopardy. They are scheduled to host the Democratic Republic of Congo on the 10th of September. On a more cheerful note, FIFA Under-17 World Cup champions Nigeria outclassed the Democratic Republic of Congo 4-0 in the return leg of the Africa Under-17 Championship qualifier in Abeokuta, Ogun State, southwest Nigeria on Sunday. Consequently, Nigeria advanced to the penultimate stage of the qualifiers courtesy of a 5-0 aggregate. Guinea beat Morocco 3-1 on aggregate. Benin pipped Mali 1-0. Egypt dismissed the Republic of Congo 2-0. South Africa outclassed Tanzania 4-0. Cameroon beat Burkina Faso 2-0 as Angola edged Mozambique 3-2 and Gabon dismissed Ethiopia 3-0. Elsewhere, Senegal and Togo drew 1-1. However, Togo advanced on the away goal rule. Zambia thrashed Botswana 6-0 as Uganda beat Rwanda 7-2 on aggregate. Meanwhile, defending champions Ivory Coast, Ghana and Tunisia progressed to the next stage of the qualifiers after their opponents withdrew from the competition. Meanwhile, the stage is set for the main qualifying contest for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations after seven teams advanced from the qualifiers over the weekend. These were Botswana, Lesotho, Mozambique, Malawi, Rwanda, Sierra Leone and Uganda. 28 teams will battle for 15 spots up for grabs to the Nations Cup in Morocco next January. Defending champions Nigeria are seeded in Group A with Rwanda, Sudan and South Africa. Algeria, Ethiopia, Malawi and Mali are in Group B. Group C include Angola, Burkina Faso, Gabon and Lesotho. Group D comprised of Cameroon, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ivory Coast and Sierra Leone. Group E has Ghana, Guinea, Togo and Uganda, while Cape Verde Islands, Mozambique, Niger and Zambia are in Group F. Group G brings together Botswana, Egypt, Senegal and Tunisia. Finally, Ghana Challenge hosts Canada at the start of their campaign at the FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup in Toronto today, Tuesday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Monk. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, August 5th.
As Nigerians are urging the federal government of Nigeria to close all her borders and is due to fight the Ebola virus in Nigeria, I wish to also say that the federal government of Nigeria should ensure that all the efforts and social agents that such a virus can be transmitted through should also be sanitized. Albert Alagbo from the Department of Public Administration, Akanibian Federal Polytechnic, Ebonyi State, Nigeria. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. That's it for this Tuesday, August 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, saying have a very nice day, Africa.
Do you love African music?
Music time in Africa.
Wake, 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 wake. Umaru, wake.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.